Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 28th, 1999.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, stretching commercially from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, and north all the way, as far north as you can go, period. And then I guess on the way back. And, of course, worldwide on the Internet. And toward that end, I should like to thank Broadcast.com for the distribution and the Intel Corporation for the magnificent map that allows the G2 program, which means you can go to my website, download the G2 program. It is free. Come back to my website, click on Streaming Video. It's all on the left-hand side of the webpage there. And here I will be. You'll see me and hear me doing the show. So you get a little bit of the visual in what I call almost television. I would like to welcome some new affiliates to the program. And they are KODI, 1400 on the dial, in Cody, Wyoming. Welcome. KIQQ, 1310 on the dial, in Hesperia, California. A little blank spot in there, so now you've got us in Hesperia. WAAV 980 on the dial in Wilmington, North Carolina. That's WAAV 980 in Wilmington, of course, is a hurricane center. And they're getting more rain now. It really sucks. I mean, they got clobbered by a hurricane, and they're already a disaster, and now more rain. Sheesh. Also, WFVA 1230 on the dial in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Welcome, WMLB in Monroe, Louisiana, where I once worked, where the accents were so thick that you couldn't even understand the song that people were requesting on the air. And I used to listen to some of the accents, and I'd say, okay, we'll play that, lying my tail end off because I couldn't understand what they were saying. KXMR, welcome, 710 on the dial in Bismarck, North Dakota, as we continue to fill in what few little holes exist in coverage anywhere, anytime, and approach, of course, the magic number of 500 affiliates. 500 affiliates. God, if you really think about it, it's scary. Anyway, as I said, bad news for North Carolina. Just as it was beginning to recover from the damage of Floyd, North Carolina today endured, check this out, 6 inches of rain is threatening homes, putting portions of towns, entire towns, underwater. A couple of weeks ago with Floyd, they had 20 inches of rain, and so you can imagine the condition the ground is in. I'm sure you've seen pictures on CNN of whole entire towns inundated, underwater. And now, without a hurricane, 6 more inches. Boy, North Carolina, who did you mistreat? Whew, tragic. Indonesia will face serious consequences, it is said, if it fails to ensure the success of the UN-sanctioned peacekeeping mission in East Timor. Well, that's interesting. How can it ensure the success of the UN-sanctioned peacekeeping mission? I don't get that. If it could ensure success, it would have done so on its own, one would think. A rare African strain of encephalitis that's already killed 4 around New York City could spread now, they're saying, to other parts of the country as infected birds fly south for the winter. The virus is transmitted to humans by mosquitoes that have bitten infected birds. New York City and New Jersey have been spraying pesticides to kill mosquitoes. Scientists in southern states are testing dead birds there for the virus. The African strain has never before been seen in the Western Hemisphere. Great. Just great. More than 2 weeks of air and artillery strikes and the deployment of Russian soldiers around the borders of Chechnya have raised a stark question. Is Russia on the brink of yet another protracted bloody war with the breakaway Republic of Chechnya? The disastrous 94 to 96 war against Chechen separatists still haunts Russia. About 100,000 people were killed, 100,000 people, according to some estimates, and the reputation of the Russian army in the process was shredded. Russian troops took months to capture the Chechen capital, Grozny. Soldiers were poorly trained and led. Corruption was common. And it was just an all-around bad deal for the Russians. But, of course, the bombs have been going off in Moscow. I guess this is a reaction to that, but this is rather worrisome. Remember, in Russia and the former Soviet republics, there's more atom bombs than a reasonable person could count in days and days and days and days. Hydrogen bombs. Want things to really get out of control there at all. Definitely would not want that. So we're going to have to watch that one very, very carefully. The Supreme Court agreed Tuesday to hear the constitutionality of a federal law that allows rape victims to sue their attackers. In other words, a test of how far Congress can go in fighting sex discrimination. Very interesting. The justices who have curtailed Congress's power in recent years will decide whether a former Virginia Tech student, Christy Brzozowska, can sue two college football players under a provision of the 1994 Violence Against Women Act. She says they raped her. Federal appeals court threw, by the way, out the lawsuit, saying Congress's power to regulate interstate commerce and assure equal protection to all citizens did not authorize it, have rape victims sue their attackers for financial damages. Well, why not? In fact, really, any crime committed upon you seems to me rape, assault, burglary. You know, whatever might be, why in the world would you not be able to sue for that? If somebody bashes your head in, you can sue for that. So if somebody rapes you, why can you not sue for that? More in a moment.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Weird stories on the radio? Must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts, and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little weary about these. Other than the Kennedy assassination, and all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you too?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the three options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name. Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I can't think of a time where also the world was in total chaos. You know, people are weirded out. And I'm beginning to wonder if there's something on this planet that's affecting people's brains.
I believe that we are in uncharted, tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented times. You know, wake up. Something is happening globally to this planet, and it's not normal. It's just not business as usual.
Now we take you back to the night of September 28th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, well, I can't resist this. This is not a tobacco company advertisement, all right? But this is, when you call one of the major tobacco companies, this is the message you get. It's a riot, and I'm going to dial it up for you right now. There, here we go. Okay, let's see if I can get this on the air. This thing is a riot. Listen.
Hello, you've reached the Brown & Williamson Tobacco Corporation. If you're an adult smoker, 21 or older, welcome. If you're not 21 and not a smoker, please hang up now. Before any information is exchanged, there will be age verification, so again, if you're not 21, please hang up now. Good. Now that it's just us, there's something that we, Brown & Williamson Tobacco, would like to tell you. It may be a little soon, but, well, it just feels right. We, the Brown & Williamson Tobacco Corporation, are in love with you. Yep, you heard right. Brown & Williamson Tobacco is in love. We're a giant corporation, and you make us feel like a little kitten. Thank you, lover. By the way, the other tobacco companies hate you and think you're ugly. They told us so. Now, press 1.
That's a giant company. And I suppose all they've got left is their sense of humor. but you got to admit, that is funny. Somebody sent that to me in email, and I simply couldn't resist. Oh, boy. Scientists believe there is a strong possibility that they will find new life forms if they drill down into a lake buried 4 kilometers under the East Antarctic ice sheet. Oh, cool. I mean, here we've already got this African thing that's never been here before, killing people in the Northeast. Drill down into a lake buried 4 kilometers under the East Antarctic ice sheet. Now, if they find new life forms come in many a variety, don't they? Little crawly things, big crawly things, little tiny things you can't even see, probably from billions of years ago. I don't know if this is such a good idea. It's like going to another planet in a lot of ways, and just sort of bringing back a bunch of air and water and dirt, whatever you find, and opening it up in a lab and, you know, subjecting yourself to whatever it may be. Actually, some researchers say, with respect to what they'll get, it may be as far in the past as 35 to 40 million years ago. 35 to 40 million years ago. They say this could have provided a unique opportunity for life to develop along a separate evolutionary path. Now, again, I say, let's think about this a little bit. Life which has formed using an entirely separate evolutionary path. Now, what makes you think or the scientists, that such life is going to automatically, as Brown and Williamson, be in love with us. It might not. We'll be following this story very, very, very carefully. Any life found down there would have to be pretty tough, you see. It would have to be capable, for example, of withstanding extremes of cold and pressure and survive in waters that are completely dark and contain few precious nutrients. Nevertheless, here's the clincher line. Scientists are confident some microorganisms could inhabit such a hostile world. Great, huh? And here is somebody who's been a faithful listener and is going to take me to task for about 7 years, he says. It's from Larry. Art, I've been a faithful listener for 7 years. One thing that bothers me, though, is your sometimes very inconsistent position on things. I'm just the kind of person who likes things to be logical. Other night, you were talking about how cynical you've become, with which I agree and concur. It's true. An hour or so later, a caller was complaining about what this country has become, and you dressed him down like a drill sergeant to a recruit. I remember. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said something like, this is the greatest country and the greatest system in the world. End quote. If you don't agree, you should travel. I always tell people that, and see how the rest of the world is, blah, blah, blah. To me, this is extremely illogical. How do you reconcile these opposite points of view? Simply, very simply, I am cynical for a really, really, really good reason. Because I have been given lots of reason to be cynical. Our government lies to us on a rather consistent basis. However, I stand by my other statement. Now, I've been around the world a few times, actually, into a lot of different countries, and I'm telling you, what we have got is by far and away the best. Far and away the best. Nobody has it as good as we do. Nobody. But that doesn't mean that I do not, even within this greatest system in the world, become cynical about our government and some social practices that we now have in this modern day and age. I'm very cynical. But make no mistake about it, I still think we're the best there is. There is nothing better, as the old saying goes. We're not perfect, but we're the best thing going. Something like that. Anyway, open lines this hour, next hour, John Hoag is going to be here. And John is a Nostradamus expert in the period of Nostradamus. 1,000 predictions for 2000. I think that might be the title of his book. I was supposed to get the book here, but they sent it to the network, so my network has the book. I don't. But that will not matter. 1,000 predictions for the year 2000, or for 2000. I guess the next 1,000 years. So all of that should be good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello there, Art.
Hello there. Oh, Fritz.
That's Fritz, yes. Well, yes. We're going to have predictions again. And we have been talking, I mean, your show has been talking about earth changes quite a bit, especially with Lloyd and the earthquake in Taiwan, right?
That's right, yes.
Now, in the metaphysical arena, who's the granddaddy of earth changes? It's Gacchese, of course, right?
Edgar Casey, yes.
And then, of course, there were all kinds of channelers in the 60s and 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
And, of course, the visitors have also predicted earth changes. But on your show, you had the self-styled prophet, Sean Morton, and then you have eight dames. And I totally dismissed those two guys because they're too improvising, too much fact and fiction.
You know what, though? Ed Dames has had about 3 or 4 hits lately. I've been reading about them as I've been getting them.
I know he's had like three or four. I know he's your favorite son, but nothing where I can put my hands on. But let me make a prediction about earth changes myself. Nobody can predict when it's going to happen. We are in the earth changes, that's for sure.
Nobody can predict it.
because it can happen tomorrow. It could happen in a twinkle of an eye, or it has a slow stage. It can take 10 to 20 years, but we are in the earth changes. Now, if the ball shifts, that's one thing. I won't be here telling you I told you so, but it's going to happen. I mean, something's going to happen.
Well, with that, I certainly agree. Thanks, Fritz.
Take care.
See ya. Yep, I agree with that. Something is going to happen, so make wise use of your time.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. It's great to be here. It really is great to be here. And to stay here, you may need to make it through some rather interesting times coming up. And before I get into any great detail with regard to that, I'm supposed to do this.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think. As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I can't think of a time where also the world was in total chaos. You know, people are weirded out. And I'm beginning to wonder if there's something on this planet that's affecting people's brains.
I believe that we are in uncharted, tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented times. You know, wake up. Something is happening globally to this planet, and it's not normal. It's just not business as usual.
Now we take you back to the night of September 28th, 1999 on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
All right. Well, there's that little tone again. People are bitching about that little tone. We're thinking about it. It's a favor we're doing for our Canadian neighbors so they know when to do a certain thing. And that's why that's in there, in case you were curious. We could put something else in there, I suppose. Maybe a lady screaming. Or, I don't know, I'd have to think about it. You could really put anything in there. It wouldn't matter. We just use that little stinger tone. We're doing it for a reason. I mean, it's not just something we're putting on the Christmas tree that doesn't belong there. Something we got there for a specific reason, but it doesn't have to be that. It could be anything. Let me think about that. There really are some possibilities. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
I'm doing okay.
Cliff, Clear Lake, California.
Yes, sir.
Three things.
Three.
A couple of years ago, didn't Ed Dames predict something was going to be coming out of Africa?
Why, yes, he did.
Guess we have to give this one to him, right?
Well, I don't know. We'll wait and see. But would you turn down your radio or TV or whatever that is?
Okay.
For me, please.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Ed did.
And Bonnie Crystal.
Yeah. Oh, Bonnie Crystal, yes.
Yeah, you had a rerun last night. I understand Iridium went under. Have you heard from her?
Well, they're still operating, sir. I
mm-hmm.
believe they're in reorganization. Doesn't have anything to do with whether the phone works.
Mm-hmm.
She's back now.
Oh, back?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hey, on your phasing?
Oh, yes.
You know, a year or so ago, you had some software, right?
Yeah.
I can't afford that big machine you got. Could you give me the name of that software?
I never got the software. I was informed by email that such software exists, I guess, for your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably go to a search engine and just put in phasing, and you'll get it.
Yeah, well, I've been that route, and all I get is, well, anyway, you know, right?
No, I don't. What do you?
I mean, you know, gazillion places to go.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Well, as a result of your comments, I'm sure somebody will send me the requested information. I never did use it. It was kind of cool what really happened. You know, I went through this phase where I really wanted to phase some music. I was having fun with that, you know. I still use some of it, as you well know. It's so hard to do using two turntables or two tape recorders, a reel-to-reel or, you know, whatever, cart machines. I mean, you can spend hours trying to phase one song and still drive yourself insane. Group ZZ Top. You know, the rock group ZZ Top, they're going to be using Ross Mitchell's voice, giving out my numbers in one of their new songs. I'm dying to hear it, by the way. And as a present for giving them permission, they sent me this CD player that has a provision on it called Jet, and it automatically phases songs. And it's pretty good. It's not as good as the Hard Labor version, but it's almost as good. And I've heard there is software as well, and I would imagine that would be true, but I don't know exactly what it is. Sorry. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Good morning. This is James calling from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Hey, James.
How are you?
Fine.
It's still open lines, right?
I beg your pardon?
Is it still open lines? I missed the past.
Oh, no, it's open lines, yeah.
It's okay. I'm in a cast, Bill. I called you about a month ago.
You're in a cast?
Yeah, so I had to run out of room so that you wouldn't hear the radio. I'm sorry.
What kind of cast are you in?
Oh, I broke my ankle.
Well, we allow people with casts like 3 extra seconds to get to their radio.
All right. Well, hopefully I'll only have it on for the next 2 weeks. So if it happens again, I'll keep that in mind.
Well, I had a cast all the way from my thumb all the way up to the top of my shoulder.
Uh-huh.
And I had to wear that for like 2 months. And it was horrible. It was horrible. I mean, it itched all the time, and I devised various little things that would snake down inside the cast and scratch places for me. It was a nightmare. I had to sleep in a chair sitting up.
Yeah, I got it on like the last week of July, so it's been like through the hottest point of the summer, I had like the adept surgery as well and all that.
Oh my God.
Yep. So I had a feeling I was going to get through tonight.
Hey, and you know what would be a real nightmare?
What's that?
To have a really big cast on and get poison ivy.
It's got to be one of the biggest nightmares a person could contemplate.
Yeah, well, I did break my... I fell off this miniature of a castle we have in the city. And it's a big, you know, passionless mass. There was poison ivy there.
You fell off what?
In the city, we have this miniature of a castle. It's like a few stories high. It was built like in the early 1900s. I don't know what the purpose was. These two philanthropists that lived in the city just built it for some reason.
Like so you climbed up it?
Yeah. I fell off.
Why did you climb up it?
It was a full moon, and I thought it'd be cool.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
All right, well, you must have called for a reason other than all this.
I did, actually. This is only the third time I've tried the show. As I told you before, like when you have guests on, either the person that called before me would ask what I was going to, or you know, I didn't feel I necessarily had anything to add to the show.
Right.
But I found two interesting things today. I had a feeling I'd get through, and here we are.
Yeah, okay.
Quickening news for you.
Sure.
I don't know if this was local, but a woman was murdered in her wedding dress.
On the way
to her wedding or something.
On the way to her wedding.
Yes.
I would like to say, what a shock.
Yeah.
But, and item number two?
Have you heard a friend of mine, who is ever the debunker of things that I come to him with that I've heard on your show, actually brought something to me.
Oh?
There's this company called JM, well, yeah, it's called JM Incorporated. They let you travel the subconscious of the person of your choice. I don't know how they...
What?
Yes, supposedly.
Oh, come on.
But you know what we're pretty sure it turned out to be?
What?
It's called JM Incorporated. Have you heard of the movie coming out called Being John Malkovich?
No.
Apparently, it's got John Cusack in it. It's got John Malkovich playing himself.
So in other words, you think it might be a promo for the movie?
Yeah, but we're pretty sure that's what it is.
I bet that's what it is, too, because we have no way to get into the subconscious of another person yet and experience it. When we do, all life will change. Can you imagine that? Being able to live somebody else's inner being? I don't think so.
I'd want to choose the person, I think.
All right, thanks. I'm still worried about this story. Hidden Antarctic Lake Links to Alien Life. The title of the story. It's from the BBC News Online. And really, I should have Keith put it online. You should get the whole thing. But they are preparing to drill down to get bacterial, well, they don't know what kind of life, in this on this ice cap. 35 to 40 million years ago, it was on the Earth, alive. And they're going to go down and get some. Trying to sit here and think about how really good an idea that is, and I don't think it's so good. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Andrew from Nashville.
Hello, Andrew.
I've been trying to get in contact with you about this Face on Mars movie.
Yes.
Well, 1955, I had an alien encounter. I know people think you're nuts, you know, but so what?
No, I don't think you're nuts. Well, not yet, anyway. Tell me
not
about,
yet.
Tell me about it.
Well, what happened is I kept seeing people run past me so fast you couldn't make them out, and I chased one, and he just disappeared, you know, went around a corner. And and next thing you know, while I was blocking the sidewalk, and a couple days later, they ran the other way. Mm-hmm. And just leave a wind with you, swoosh, you know. And then one day I was in a grocery store a few blocks from my house. And
you are beginning to test me a little now.
Really? I'm serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
You were in a grocery store.
Yeah, and I noticed this alien squatted down where the vegetables are, the canned vegetables.
How did you know it was an alien?
I can see his face. He's trying to cover himself with a white hat.
And what did the face look like?
He had human eyes, but the rest of it ceases there. He had a lower mouth, you know, near his chin, and like a typical alien. But he had human eyes and no hair. I didn't notice any ears. And he talks better English than I do. But he asked me
Why was he interested in the vegetables?
I guess he eats They had four of them over there.
Well, you know, it's actually somewhat comforting to know that they might be vegetarian.
It could be.
Yeah. That's good news, actually.
But anyhow, he asked me if I'd open the door real wide for him when I left, and I said, sure.
Yeah.
And some fat woman got up there, and she opened it wide, and all of a sudden it seemed like a windstorm went out that door. And people said,
did it go right through her, do you think, or past her? I mean, was she so big, it actually went past her?
Oh, he's only about 5'8" and weighs about 70 pounds. He's a real skinny fellow.
That's really skinny.
And, yeah, he really... But anyhow,
okay, I know what you're encountering. You know about the Men in Black?
No.
You don't know about the Men in Black?
Well, I think somebody coming by and, you know, stealing evidence and stuff like that.
Well, these are the Fast Black, they call them.
Well, these guys, I tell you, they run like a wind. You can see the back of them when they're about a half a block away before you even recognize what happened.
All right. Well, I give that story about a 6 on a scale of 10. I'm not saying what you're saying is not so. I mean, over in the vegetable section, I don't spend enough time in grocery stores. Anybody else out there encounter an alien in the vegetable area of the grocery store? Produce. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Dan in Idaho Falls.
Hello, Dan.
I have a supernova update.
Okay.
Prediction that on the 3rd of October is when the supernova shall occur, either that day or shortly thereafter.
What was that? October what?
October 3rd. That's next Sunday.
Well, that doesn't give us much time.
No.
What are you going to do with your remaining days?
Well, I'm just going to spend them the way I have been. What I regret is that nobody even notices the sun is doing strange things. At sundown, it's very strange color.
Yeah, but how does that translate to supernova?
There's been two hypernovas in deep space, and fabulous amounts of neutrinos have gotten here.
Well, that's true. And there have been planets like ours, thought to be stable, that have suddenly virtually had such a big CME that they sterilize planets. That's what they're now finding. But I've got to know why you think our sun is going to be the victim of such, or we're going to be the victim of our sun on this specific date.
Well, I've worked through the physics, and I know how neutrinos work now.
Well, I'm happy for you, but we haven't worked through all that. So can you give me some science behind what you're saying?
I can't go through the science with you.
Why not?
Too much.
Try me.
All right. In 1993, there was a core collapse of our sun. It was caused by a massive amount of sodium-22.
Wait a minute. In 93, there was a collapse of our sun?
Core collapse.
Nobody,
reaction zone.
But nobody noticed.
That's right. It wasn't supposed to be noticed. See, a massive amount of sodium-22 was put into our sun to consume carbon-12.
What foul person did that?
That was the Galactic Federation. They did so to prevent...
What about the old, the Prime Directive? How about that, huh?
Their Prime Directive
around with somebody's
is to protect
son.
Life. It's not
protect
to,
life.
They can interfere as much as they want.
So you're saying they did this to help us?
They did this to help us, and it was a very big deed of fortune for us.
Well, if that's true, then why would they let our sun explode on October 3rd?
Well, you see, back on July 14th, President Clinton found out about it and sent our space forces against another planet.
So he pissed them off.
And that is a death penalty for an entire planet.
I see. So the entire planet's demise should be blamed on Bill Clinton. That's a pretty heavy load. All right. Well, thank you very much. So we apparently dropped some bombs or something on somebody else without our knowledge. And they're ticked off, and they're going to blow our sun up. October 3rd. Well, that doesn't give us much time. What the hell's today? Oh, man. Sometime zones, it's already the 29th. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Andy from Clackamas, Oregon.
Yes, Andy.
I got a couple of things here.
Yes.
Did you know that you're on the front page of the Oregonian in the paper?
I've been told that, yes.
Oh, you've been told that?
I have, yes. People have noticed.
I didn't know
that.
If you knew.
Yes, I guess to do with Peter Davenport and the sightings here on the West Coast.
And when are you going to have Dr. Fred Bell on again to talk about time travel?
I don't know. I don't know, Andy.
You don't know?
When I'm motivated.
I can't read to you about the article in the Oregonian?
No, I have it already.
Oh, you have it? Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Andy. When I'm motivated. Dr. Bell. He was something else. Really something else. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Art?
Yes.
Art, how you doing?
Fine.
This is Jim. I'm in Saginaw, Michigan.
Yes, Jim.
WSGW.
Right.
I just wanted to call and say you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. You're hard to hear here. I'm in the middle of this industrial complex.
What do you make there?
Car parts.
Car parts?
Car parts.
And so you're like on the third shift then?
Yes, I am. Well, I listen to you on the radio, but I got headphones that I listen to you on.
Right.
Because I can't get AM radio inside the shop.
So then how do you get the signal? I don't get it.
Well, I have an AM radio on the outside wall with wireless headphones.
There you are. Thank you. I was telling everybody about this last week. You can get an AM radio, put it by a window, get a little FM transmitter that's perfectly legal, and transmit it through any large building. It really does work. Well, I figure this one is appropriate to what we do here, late at night, early in the morning. Don't you think? This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 28th, Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 28, 1999.
What in the world happened to Billy Goodman? Billy used to be across town from me. Used this as his theme song, did a show kind of like mine. In fact, we both did in Las Vegas about a decade ago. And what has become of Billy? Anyway, good evening or good morning, depending on your time zone. I'm Art Bell. Coming up shortly is John Hoag. He's generally acknowledged to be one of the world's experts on Nostradamus, and there is a lot to talk about. We are in the time of Nostradamus, aren't we? dead smack in the middle of the time. And I contend, between now and the spring of 2000, we are going to be in for one wild ride. But we'll ask an expert about all of that shortly. Let's see, I've got to do this, and we'll talk about this little stinger, in just a moment.
Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think. As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Stories on the radio must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts, and things like that.
Yep.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you two?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government's story of 9/11. Here's the 3 options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew what was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Now we take you back to the night of September 28, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, all right, that little tone is driving a lot of people crazy. Not a lot, some. And so I suggested, well, it could be anything. I mean, we do that for our Canadian friends. We have so many Canadian affiliates. And so that's for them to know when a commercial set is coming up. It could be anything. It doesn't matter. Somebody wrote to me, my suggestion for replacing the stinger for Canada would be to use the sound of the cat screeching when its tail got stepped on. How long do you think that one would last, huh? You know what happens to people who have cats on their lap when I play that? You've never seen human skin shredded, have you? Cats react in a strange way to that. All right, now comes John Hogue. What lies in store for the world as the millennium approaches? Fire, famine, a world in chaos, or a world in peace? The eradication of hunger and disease, the coming of the fabled age of Aquarius, promising virtual paradise on Earth. Prophecies, are they the crazed musings of lunatics and madmen, or the grim portents of doom from the lips of seers whose vision pierces the veil of time itself? That's profound. Renowned prophecy expert John Hogue has collected 1,000 such predictions for the days to come. Listed by subjects of topical interest to our times, as all humanity sits poised on the brink of a new millennium, are we headed for Eden or Armageddon, or maybe both, one to follow the other, I wonder. John Hogue is regarded as one of the world's great experts on Nostradamus, and here he is. John Hogue, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back, Art.
Good to have you. Okay, John, where to begin? Well, let's begin where, remember the little promo you did for me last week, at the end of last week?
Yeah, about Y2K. Actually, that little passage from Nostradamus might be a great way to start off our discussion.
Precisely. Explain it the way you did then. We were talking about, of course, Y2K. We talk about it a lot on this program, whether it'll be something or nothing. And the fact that large portions of the electrical grid could go down, if not here in other parts of the world, it certainly could happen. And then you came in.
Yes, it's it all starts with a dating. Nostradamus' prophecies, he was very specific about talking about July of 1999, and then following that up with a description of an eclipse that happened at the end of a cycle of centuries. And then he goes about describing where the shadow of the moon would pass over Europe, over Flanders and other areas.
And, of course, we saw that occur.
Yeah, so it's the only eclipse he could be talking about, because a cycle of centuries is a millennium. So after that, he then says this. He says, let's see, where is it? Yes, and then there shall be, in the month of October, some great movement and transference. And it will be such that one will think that the earth has lost its natural movement, and that it will be plunged into an abyss of perpetual darkness. There will be initial omens in the spring, I mean spring of 2000, and extraordinary changes in rapid succession thereafter, reversals of kingdoms and mighty earthquakes will increase. This will increase with the new Babylon, which may be an allusion to Iraq. So, lots of things there.
Well, now, let's take it the next step. When you were on the other day, you said, imagine a prophet like Nostradamus looking ahead and into the future and being used to seeing light, and then one day in his vision looking across the world and seeing large portions of the world go dark.
Yes, it would be like,
could he have been seeing Y2K?
Well, I think it could definitely be that. And as we said last week, he in 1555, just the ability to see something that we take for granted, but would be simply fantastic in his time. The great skyscrapers and the half moon coastline of Bombay, or the great skyscrapers of Shanghai, all going blacking out all at once, and seeing such a thing, he might misinterpret his signs and elaborate, expand on it, and think, my God, the world has gone in blackness. The movement of the cars and everything, gone. And maybe he has overshot his visual sight. It may certainly see huge areas of Asia. In fact, right, even today they're talking about the red phone between the Pentagon and the Kremlin still is not Y2K compliant, between Russia and America. There's still large tracts of Russia.
And, I heard they were hooking up a special line.
Yeah.
Because of that, because it might not be Y2K compliant. And we're going to be talking to each other, I guess, while everybody else is out partying at midnight. Our president and Boris Yeltsin will be on the phone saying, how's it going there?
I doubt it. Same people who say the nuclear reactors in Russia will be Y2K compliant, it doesn't make me feel very confident, but
I wonder if they've done any testing over there. Now, I know that there have been problems with, reports that are not wholly truthful that have been given regarding our nuclear power plants.
Yes.
Not wholly truthful. But imagine in Russia, where their attitude has been publicly stated, well, we're gonna wait and see what happens and then fix it.
Yes. It's a very much when I lived in Asia, and you know, every culture has its different positives and negatives, and one thing I found was kind of a cultural given was that often things, they wait till it goes bad, and then it gets fixed. You know, in power outages that I experienced in India and other places, with living there and knowing how sometimes things are done, I'm not very confident when I hear people say, "Oh yes, it'll be all ready when the time comes around."
Yeah.
It's almost like, and let's, you know, rub our rabbit foot, you know.
What do you personally believe? I ask all my guests now about Y2K. What do you think it'll come to?
Well, I do think there will be some large-scale power outages in the third world and the former second world, the Soviet bloc. I always felt, even years ago, that America would probably go through relatively good times with it, not too many problems in the major super system grids, but what's the big unknown is the little guy, you know, the little businesses. People who just haven't had time.
And I'll tell you, the stock market is getting really weird. It's down now from 11,000 whatever to 10,000, 200 or 300 or something like that. And earlier today, it took a bigger than 200-point dip. It came back to only lose a little, but it was down at 1.200 points. It's really getting kind of crazy, and October is not quite even here yet.
No, and that kind of brings back the statement of Nostradamus about sudden reversals. It's, you know, the stock market seems to me, at least, to have been tremendously inflated for years now. I just look and shake my head in disbelief when I see it looking like the Nisei average 10 years ago, you know, approaching 11, 12,000 points. And some of my contacts and psychics and others are seeing a collective vision that we got about three more years of this illusion, this bubble, before it has to go through a major correction. And it may probably be triggered by ecological stresses that might overtake the insurance industry because of hurricanes.
Yeah, well, hurricanes would be one. But while we're on that subject, I read a story earlier, I guess you heard it in the first hour, about these plans these scientists have to drill down in the Antarctic and retrieve organisms that were here 30 or 40 million years ago, 30 or 40 million years ago, and developed as life, and somehow survived this incredible cold, and they're thinking of bringing them up. And I just, to me, that's like, it's like going into space and getting a little alien microbe or creature and bringing them back to Earth and just sort of opening the cage.
Oh, yes. It's kind of chilling in how it parallels some prophecies about mass global plagues that cover the entire northern hemisphere, one the Nostradamus talks about, and it seems to be in around our times. I mean, one of the big mistakes we may make and hopefully learn from is we keep going into the unknown regions of the rainforest and pulling microbes out of there.
Right.
We now have encephalitis, Western Nile mosquitoes on the eastern seaboard. We have the Great Collider in Long Island, which actually parallels some of the potential interpretations for Edgar Cayce's prophecies about the destruction of New York.
Oh, for those who don't know about that, the Collider is going to do something that has never been done before. They're saying they're going to create a mini Big Bang. Now, the Big Bang was really big. It accounts for, it is said, everything that is now that we can see and touch, Earth, Sun, all the planets, everything else, all the other stars out there. In other words, all that is. That was the Big Bang. So my question is, what's a mini Big Bang?
Well, you know, there are these prophecies about a great scattered flame covering the new city, which is often implied by interpreters to be New York.
New York.
And there's also Edgar Cayce looking in his future life. He had a visionary dream where he saw himself born in Nebraska in the year 2100, and he was taken by these scientists with very thick glasses and long beards into a cigar-shaped silver ship, which hovered over the new coastal areas of Nebraska, which are now the Pacific, and the ruins of New York City, which were just being rebuilt, and as it says in my book, 1,000 for 2,000, they were being rebuilt. He couldn't be clear whether it was destroyed in a war or by some disaster. And hopefully, the scientists who are making bets on this one in November when they're going to start up that machine will be as lucky as the scientists standing in Alamogordo in 1945 were betting 50-50 with Oppenheimer that the atomic bomb would start a chain reaction and burn up the atmosphere, that it will not do anything like that. But I'm just wondering how little a black hole you need to cause a rather large explosion.
Well, I would like to have detailed for me exactly what they expect a mini Big Bang to be. I mean, it wouldn't have to be very big to take care of one planet.
Or even one city, or one county.
More of you. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so. It's like the kid playing with his chemistry set, except it's a very big chemistry set, multi-billion dollars.
We wonder, John, why we don't hear other civilizations yet by radio or whatever. Well, maybe they all develop along similar lines until they get to the point where they can, for example, we'll just use this as an example, where they can create a mini Big Bang, and irresistibly, inevitably, they push that button, just as we will. Now, of course, that could be it, out of just blinking out of existence, and maybe that's where everybody gets stuck. Who knows?
Well, hopefully we're less efficient, Art, and maybe when we do it, we won't do it so efficiently and survive and learn from it. It is something. Why are we so in a rush to tempt such a thing? I mean, wouldn't it be nicer to put a collider way out in space somewhere rather than just a few miles from New York City? Very odd. But
and odd to do it near such a large population center. I mean, normally this is something you would expect them to do out here by me. Not that I'm unhappy that it's back there, mind you, but it may not make any difference. I mean, again, I want to find for me a mini Big Bang. How mini? And if it's mini, why do you call it a Big Bang, mini or not?
Well, if it's mini, it might be the biggest Mickey Mouse of all mistakes. Hopefully it won't be. I don't know. There's a lot of accident, laws of accidentality that make prophecy and make us so predictable. I mean, we kind of, it's like the Mystic Gurdjieff used to talk about. Everything happens. People live in a state of semi-conscious sleepwalking. And they, even in the good things that they do, they don't kind of think it completely out.
Well, like you remember Jurassic Park?
Mm.
Did you see that movie?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember they were talking about, the scientist was there talking about the probability of such a complex system as they had constructed on this island functioning properly without disaster occurring. And he was saying it's impossible. It's going to occur. Eventually, at some point, a disaster is going to occur and all the dinosaurs are going to get out. And they did.
Yes, and it's, I guess it's, to find some positive potential out of these historical mistakes that keep repeating themselves in our past history and then in my work for the last 30 years, I keep seeing in the scriptures of the world how we're going to repeat it again, that hopefully at some time we are lucky enough to survive our mistakes and learn them because, you know, we are going to deal with genetic engineering. Jurassic Park is a movie now, but in 50 years' time, that will be a reality.
Oh, I believe it. They're bringing back, they're actually working on bringing back species right now. I hope they don't bring back the wrong one. Hold on, John. We'll be right back. Stay right where you are.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
Oh, no! 1 minute more. Oh, come on now, let's rock the dog. It's going to
Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
Do you want to know what's coming? Not everybody does. John Hoag is one of the world's experts on Nostradamus. And in a moment, we will continue. If you don't want to know what's coming, then you're going to want to tune out.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
I don't know. It's got a certain dimensionality to it. I kind of like it myself. Anyway, listen. Think about this a little bit. Nostradamus, if I am not incorrect, and I may be, predicted the king of terror coming from our sky in the seventh month. And that has been interpreted to be July through September. Well, September is just almost gone. And if it's here, I don't see it. It's an obvious question for you, John. What do you think?
Well, I said in the last few years that I had a sense that I would know clearly what it was if July came and went, and it was such a clear prophecy that I already come out with what I think is at least my interpretation of what the King of Terror is. And it's, you got to understand that Nostradamus is often using people sometimes to hide things and things to hide people in his strange, codified, nebulous form of prediction. And so it was never clear if the King of Terror was a person or a phenomenon descending from the skies.
Sure.
And so with that said, and looking at in general at the whole dearth of prophecies from other traditions, I have to conclude that the King of Terror descending from the skies is our climate going out of control. It's global warming. And perhaps the Antichrist is, in some respects, our anti-consciousness. To explain that further, it would be, up to this time, Art, we've had been able to pretty much muddle along, and we could rely on what we did in the past to get some enlightenment about how we can deal with challenges that come up to us in the future. But with the coming of this new millennium and the coming of the 21st century, we're facing challenges that our past has never experienced. We've never had.
But we've always had that. I mean, we always have challenges in front of us that we've never had before.
Yes, but they've always had a certain finite quality. They've never been so globally pervasive. Oh, they've never. Certainly, we've had crowding and population problems and famines, but we've never had a situation where by October 12th, they estimate we'll have 6 billion people. That's a full billion people in 12 years. Cool. The estimate is another 11 years, we'll see the 7th billionth child, another 11 years after that, the 8th. And so it's not like they're new challenges, but maybe it'd be better to say they're more magnified by our numbers and by our need to consume resources. And this magnification, multiplication of the problem is going to face us with untold challenges where the climate is going crazy, the fish we're emptying the ocean of fish, the phytoplankton, which are really the basis for a lot of our oxygen creation, are threatened.
Yes.
We have the population is now invading the rainforest, which, as the Amazon Indians used to say, the tropical rainforest support the sky, cut down the trees, and disaster will follow. That's a pre-Columbian tribal statement. We've never cut down the rainforest before, so we've never seen what that might do to change the climate. We've never released all the unknown. 60% of the organic matter and life forms of our planet live there. So 60% of viruses and diseases we've never known before live there, too.
I definitely would say cutting down the rainforest is a terrible idea, and we are doing that.
And so, you know, so, these are like, we've always cut down forests. I mean, this isn't anything new.
I know, but not the rainforest.
Not like the whole thing. We've always gobbled up the food or destroyed the range, but now there's no kind of new world to go to. And so we're kind of facing a habit of, well, there's always another hill to go over, but we're really in a reality of, no, there's no more hills to go over. And so, in a way, looking to the past, ways of doing things will be less and less workable. We're going to have to kind of look at it all new again. And a lot of people aren't ready to do that. And as the Hopi prophecies talk about it, they talk about how in the purification of the world that's coming, and according to their final warnings, we're basically right on track for it.
Oh, listen, I had Hopi elders on the program, and they said clearly, unambiguously, we are here. Not because we want to be, we don't go to the media, but we came to you because we are now in the beginning of the cleansing. We're not, it's not just ahead, this is not prophetic information I'm giving you, said he, but we're in it now.
Yes, absolutely, and they've just recently come out with new warnings about how the sun is out of balance again, and it may enter into a solar flare-up that maybe the biggest in 500 years. So it is that will trigger probably Nostradamus' prophecy about the great drought that covers the 48th latitude, which is where all the northern hemisphere grain belts are. And, you know, given the fact that in a few decades China will need all the current food that we can, grains that we can export just to feed itself alone, we are heading for some unique challenges.
Well, here's an interesting one, and this is just really recent science, but it's hard science. It has always been thought that our sun is extremely stable, and that it always has been, and that it is decaying at a certain rate, and billions of years in our future, which we always tell our children, our sun will someday wink out, stop producing enough light to support life here, so forth and so on, and it'll just sort of slowly peter out. Well, unfortunately, astronomers are now seeing suns just like ours, thought to be extremely stable, suddenly giving off bursts or CMEs so strong that they sterilize every single planet around them. Now, these are not rogue suns. These are suns just like ours.
The solar mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Capable of suddenly going berserk and sterilizing everything in their path, i.e. us.
Well, you know, Nostradamus gives us a little hope on that line. He describes the sun going haywire and devouring Earth in a huge conflagration. First, it sends out energy that dries up all the waters and kills all the life on the surface. And then it basically, with huge meteor showers and flames, and then it basically devours the sun. But then it says that in his prophecies, and this is in the epistle to Henry II, his king at the time, he said, but that Mars will continue its revolutions around the sun. What makes this prophecy interesting is it's dated for the year 3797, which is just under 1800 years in our future. And even though many astronomers would take umbrage at his timeline, thinking, as you said, we tell the kiddies that we have several billion years, he gets the volume of our little yellow dwarf right. You ask any astronomers.
Yeah, but you know something, Philip? Whether it's billions of years or 1,800 years, when you're asking somebody who's going to be around at best 70 or 80 years more with some of my younger audience, basically they go, who cares? 1,800 years, let them deal with it.
Well, you know, that's true, and I mean, that's just one view, and that's just Nostradamus' view, and he's not always right on his dates. Maybe it is sooner. He also talks about a huge meteor the size of a mountain 1 square mile in circumference that crashes in the Aegean Sea and sends 900-foot tidal waves up the Arno Valley into Florence, and they splash over Mount Olympus.
Wow. Wow.
That could happen anytime.
Yeah, we could be hit any time. We know only a small fragment of the number of real killers out there, rocks that are sailing by us, and we're not going to get any warning. I mean, they're always talking about having warning, and they make movies about it and all the rest of it. We're not going to get any warning. Most times, scientists report in the newspaper, Earth had a close encounter last Thursday, and that's the first they knew of it.
Yeah.
So if it were to happen, we'd get no warning. It would just happen.
Well, and it's fortunate that in all these thousands of years of recorded history that at least it seems have not happened. I mean, there is some indication, some theories that the Dark Ages happened because of some meteor striking off or near Ireland.
Well, ask the dinosaurs.
Well, yeah, that's 65 million years, so that's a bit longer period of time. But you know, back to what you're saying about the kids that are listening.
Yeah, but you know what, John?
Yes.
My wife went up to a local casino where we had a very nice meal the other day, and she hit four of a kind 3 times in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. So 65 million years ago, cool. Fun.
But I agree with you. It could happen anytime. Life is so tenuous.
Oh.
But I would tell those young people that there's something just around the corner that is going to affect their lives, and that's like the fossil fuel super system collapse in 2010, the potable water collapse by the 2020s, grain belts collapsing.
Did he see anything about people fighting over water?
Oh, yes. And many prophets do. That, in fact, water will be the cause of the wars of Armageddon. Not religion. It's supposed to happen, according to Ezekiel, when the Euphrates dries up. Well, the Ataturk Dam project, at times when it's drawing water from the headwaters of the Euphrates, has dropped the volume 75%. So people in the Golden Crescent, Fertile Crescent, are pretty angry about that, and it could very well, 40% of Israel's water comes from the West Bank.
Oh, yes.
So, and Israel currently is doing some dam work on the headwaters of the Jordan, which is upsetting Jordan and Syria. And, you know, it's a serious problem. And India, just recently, the futurists, I think, reported from Indian scientists, they estimate that by 2025, India will run out of fresh water.
Do you believe that Armageddon, as such, will in fact begin in the Middle East?
It's highly likely, especially over the Temple Mount. And it's always, whenever I hear that, you know, there's also a lot of prophecies concerning how the people, you'll know its time is coming when it looks like peace has finally come. That's the real dangerous period, because those forces which for thousands of years habitually don't want peace there will then make their move in some terrorist action. And it would behoove the people who love peace to not let a handful of madmen pull them down. And it's still, there's always a possibility of it. I mean, when you were talking earlier about being a cynic with all these things happening, I can certainly understand that.
Oh, I am cynical.
In a strange way, I'm also cynical in a different way. In sort of what I might call a kind of a cynicism of Dharma, if you will, where you kind of see where there's just certain things that can't be fixed if you fix them the way people try to fix them for thousands of years, because it doesn't work to fix them, because they're always, you know, people are always trying to end war out there. They're trying to make the world work. The real problem is me, not this thing out there. It's you and I. That's at least how I see it. It's like we haven't, like, dealt with the war going on inside our own consciousness.
Well, we certainly have not dealt with our environment.
Yeah.
We've argued about it. We've talked about it. We've had political wars about it. But we know it's happening. We can see it all around us. The effects are everywhere. And we still do not directly address it, or rarely so.
Because we're the problem.
Because we're the problem.
Yeah. Not the environmental problems. They're there, certainly, and they're real.
We're causing them.
But the real problem is the two-legged ecological disaster that's not kind of taking stock on how it's destroying the environment. And we have to change inside. We have to see how we tick and why we're not functioning.
Well, change, and
our societies don't really help us to do that.
Change in what way? Change inside, become more spiritual, cast away our cars and our homes and our lawnmowers?
No. No, not at all. That's out again. It's like solving the problem by fixing the cars and the lawnmowers.
Stop eating so much? Stop fishing the ocean so much?
It's basically the first step is that we have to look at what it is in us that makes us overconsume, makes us, we got to look at ourselves like
our humanity, John.
Yeah.
We are consumers. Even people in third world countries, they may not have what we have, but they want what we have.
Sure. But it's mathematically impossible. It's not going to happen. You know that the estimate is made that if everybody consumed like Americans, the world could sustain a population of 2.5 billion people. And certainly, the thing is that to become subjective scientists.
There are, John, and you can figure out how to comment on this or not comment at all, but there are plenty of people out there who believe that there are certain organizations or groups that understand that fully well and have plans to reduce the population to the area of about 2 billion at the appropriate time. Comments?
Well, whether there are people out there planning it or whether our own kind of collective sleepwalking towards that future will do it, I think I doubt that we can get through the first half of this next century without billions of people passing on, because we just can't sustain what we're doing. And, you know, humanity can either choose to either control our numbers and change the way we behave to kind of soften that blow, or we'll just have to go through that blow, and then the survivors will be wiser, and maybe we'll create a better society from the pain rather than from the understanding. And that's always been the cycle in that's shown in prophecy.
A natural culling of nature?
Well, if we choose to think like mice, read like mice, pollute and consume like mice, and I used to be a pest controller, so I used to deal with mice populations.
Did you really?
Yeah, I mean, I used to, in Eastern Oregon, there was this town built there, and it was like there were suddenly all of these mice that lived in a harsh and climate that suddenly had all these mobile homes to hide under, and they had all the food available, and in a way they behaved like an affluent society, modern human society. They suddenly, the litters that would not survive the summers or the winters suddenly lived and got fat and spread a weaker genetic pool.
And did you ever see that movie with Christopher Walken? It was a riot. It was a funny movie with Christopher Walken, who was a pesticide guy, or, you know, he went in and took care of pests like mice. Did you ever see that?
Was that The Dark Zone?
No, I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was just an absolute riot. He was studying the mouse that he was going after, and mice, he suggested, can be very tricky indeed.
Well, what happens is that when mice overpopulate, or like lemmings, some disease comes through, nature just kind of eradicates them, or they get all freaked out and stressed out.
Did you actually see that happen with large populations?
And the only way to stop it as a pest controller was to control their numbers so that they didn't overbreed and stress their super systems, if you will, of food and water and shelter, and then kind of endanger themselves with large scale plagues and
got you.
Yeah. So,
all right.
Well, what I'm simply saying is that people seem to be acting like mice.
People like mice. Yeah, we are. All right. Hold on. We'll be right back from the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999. But she lets me come every time. Can they come mine?
Thank you. chaka uga 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 everything's all right. Ah, what kind of feeling? I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy, its taste is on my mind.
To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
Well, good morning, everybody. As you can see, I'm living in the past again. And I just can't help it. John Hogue is here. He's probably the world's expert on Nostradamus, and we're talking about what is to come.
All the good luck when we're all alone.
And it's not necessarily all bad. But on the other hand, you're going to certainly want to keep your eyes open.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser.
Weird stories on the radio? Must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you too?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the three options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I can't think of a time where also the world was in total chaos. You know, people are weirded out. And I'm beginning to wonder if there's something on this planet that's affecting people's brains.
I believe that we are in uncharted, tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented times. You know, wake up. Something is happening globally to this planet, and it's not normal. It's just not business as usual.
Now we take you back to the night of September 28th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, back now to John Hogue, who's generally acknowledged to be one of the world's great experts on Nostradamus. And, John, what about the people out there who say, and I will say it for them, these prophets, even the good, supposed good ones like Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce and all the rest, come on, give us a break. There's only one thing that's going to happen. God will dictate when that will occur, and no man shall know the time.
Yes, Deuteronomy.
Yes, yes.
And also Matthew.
Yes, yes.
And the only problem with that argument is you don't hear the opposite argument. You don't hear what the Hittites said about Deuteronomy or the Canaanites when Moses made those statements. And you know how it is with an argument. If the only data you have is from the group that supports one side of the argument, it may be true, it may be not true, but objectively speaking, it's a bit subjective. It's open to interpretation. It may be open to a certain prophetic bias, what I like to call propaganda.
Well, I guess that's true. What about the people who just don't care? In other words, their attitude is, well, if it's all going to end, you know, whether they happen to believe in the next life or not, there's not a damn thing I can do about it. So,
In a way, I agree with them.
Do you?
But in a little different, yeah. In a funny way, like I was saying earlier about a certain kind of spiritual cynicism that I support.
Yes.
It's we can't really do anything about the big abstracts that are overwhelming us. It's really the wrong way to transform it. I feel more and more after, like, I've been around the world like you have. I've at least three times lived in a lot of strange, unusual places.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how different cultures deal with things. And it really comes down to that there's no way, if you look at history, the collective attempts to fix things haven't worked. I mean, at the best that we muddle along, but, you know, wars haven't ended, hunger hasn't ended.
Sure.
Things haven't ended. So I feel more and more like the real transformation is individual. And can only be individual. I can't do anything about what my government is doing, derailing the world or whatever. But I can do something about me. That's at least the new theory that I'm testing in my own life as a subjective scientist. That is, someone who's using certain means to unlock how I tick. I mean, at least I can take care of me and see what it is about me that contributes my little vial of war and hatred and fear and uncreativeness to the world, and also to see what little contribution I make to make the world better, even if it's a little thing.
Well, then, you should be particularly concerned, as should I, because you relay some rather dire prophecy, and you've got to imagine, I have, that you are contributing to the collective consciousness a concept of helplessness and inevitability that actually drives reality.
Well, unfortunately, in the medium that we're currently working in, and also in TV,
yes,
the difficulty always is that, I mean, at least on your show, I sometimes get a chance to speak for hours on the subject and at least not soundbite it to death to a point
where
it's pure sensation rather than any statement. We can at least talk about things. That's why I love doing your show. And I agree with you that in a lot of what we've been speaking of in the last hour and a half is pretty scary. And all I can say to that is to the people to just read the full book, because everything I've got in there is counterbalanced. All the fearful stuff is counterbalanced by many of the same prophetic traditions also seeing an alternative future, a millennium of peace, a fantastic future for us if we can just get over the next 30 years.
30 years, yeah. 30 years.
Amazing things. We got to get over this 30-year hump. Childhood's coming to an end for humanity, and if we can get through this growing pain period, we've got. I mean, there's a whole list of things that are fantastic about us going into space. I mean, Nostradamus even described in his old French a phrase which can only mean people will be living in Aquarius and Cancer, i.e., the constellations of Aquarius and Cancer. That when the world is blown up in 3797, it's sort of a, who cares? We're out there so much, and we're living and meeting what he calls dog-face people and strange, fantastic, demonic people. Of course, he's trying to describe something he can't understand from the 1500s. Perhaps he's describing the fantastic-looking creatures or humanoid.
Dog faces and demonic-looking?
Yeah, monsters.
Now, try and just don't sugarcoat it for us here.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, imagine, you got to understand, if he's seeing people that are not of this earth, he may give them a definition that is, he uses the word actually not demonic, but monstra, which can mean divine omen or monstrous looking. And I can imagine that if I were speaking from the 16th century and looking into my little water bowl and getting in a trance and seeing human beings meeting some other extraterrestrial life for the first time, that I, just as we were talking earlier about misinterpreting a blackout in Bombay, a man from the 16th century might misinterpret descriptions of fantastic, angelic, or monstrous-looking people as space extraterrestrial civilizations that humanity may deal with in the future.
Well, that's absolutely, of course that's possible. He could be looking at aliens, for that matter, on Earth.
Yes, well.
And interpreted in the way he did then.
Genetic engineering, and also not only the aliens that are currently visiting now.
Monsters of our own creation, you mean?
Well, the other thing is that the big hurdle coming in the more distant future is humanity dealing with its with genetic revolutions. And it you know, it's sort of, there are certain things that happen in future history that are sort of unavoidable because of certain steps we've taken. For instance, 100 years ago, if we were sitting at the blacksmith's thinking about the future of the horse and buggy industry, we might think, wow, you know, isn't it terrible that the car is coming? And, you know, for better or worse, it couldn't be stopped, and people tried to stop it in those days.
Well, let me put you through a test.
All right.
Well, let's say that you, John Hogue, could have a being, a human being, minus emotion, minus even perhaps some degree of self-awareness, minus a lot of human traits, and yet still of a human body, which would be an absolute virtual, don't worry about it, rest of your life, slave for you, a genetically created slave, which would do your bidding, do your work, provide you with everything you wanted. Would you accept that?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
But unfortunately, it gets even worse. There may even be situations where people have somnambulant genetic slaves, which are organ resources. They're in stasis, and organs are taken from them.
Sure.
And these are the things that people in the future are going to have to sort out. Just like when Nostradamus, 450 years ago, was telling his king in a letter, you know what, this sounds unbelievable, let me tell you this. You and your kind will be deposed, executed even.
How about this, John? A human being with every single body part, which would match yours, save a brain. There would be only a brain stem enough to keep this thing alive till you needed, say, a liver or whatever.
Yeah, I know. It is.
Now, you say now, no. How horrible. But if you needed the liver and you were dying on your deathbed, and they said, well, do you want this or not?
You know, it is, as I was trying to say, there are things that horrify me today and horrify you and other people in prophecy are often the things that people in the future bless. As I was saying about Nostradamus, he called the advent of peasants taking over the world and deposing kings. The people at his time were horrified about that, including him. But we call it democracy.
That's true.
We see the blessing of it. As me, as a 20th century man with my 20th century conditioning, I have to own up that I have a hard time with that. But in my 30 years of studying prophecy, I've constantly had to encounter my limitations in seeing things that will come that are so alien to my understandings, to my sense of morality. It happened in the past to prophets. It's happening to prophet interpreters today. It's imagine, I mean, we could look at a number of themes that would be horrifying to us in the distant future that people might bless, like the end of sexuality, the...
What?
Yeah, something like that. The end of love, the end of many things. In fact, the end of 1000 for 2000, I have a section called The Hard-to-Swallow Future, where we just list a lot of collective themes.
Let's stick with the end of sex. Now, where'd you come up with that one?
Well, there are indications in Nostradamus and others that in the distant future, humanity will evolve to be more androgynous. And from that step, it will evolve to be sexless physically. We can see that in certain UFO cultures. They seem to be already there.
Sexless, yes.
In fact, they may even be us coming back through a time portal. In some cases, this could be so. Now, the thing, first off, to think about is, you know, nothing lost is left unreplaced. The void will be filled, and it may
with
vary.
What? With respect, for example, to sex.
Yeah, exactly. Well, since most of us, obviously the people of the future will find a way to have orgasmic pleasure that doesn't require a physical trigger, and over time one can see where they would just go, poof, we don't need it anymore. We can live in a state of orgasm.
Well, it seems to me that the ones that would be left with the empty bag would be the guys. I mean, if that ever happens, we're toast.
Well, hopefully virtual reality will save us in this level, but I know, I mean, it's pretty mind-boggling. I'm not saying I agree with this whole list, but it's like I have to report it as a prophet scholar. There's some pretty wild things out there that people in the future may think, God, how did they ever live without having no sexuality?
The little machine with a button, right?
Well, you know, it's one of the things I think that makes people so fascinated with the whole metaphor of the Borg. Horrified and fascinated with the Star Trek thing.
I think it would be the end of us. In other words, if you could push a button and have an orgasm, that would be the end of us. First of all, it would be. Second of all, it would be illegal.
It is in the 20th century.
Because, well, no, it's not. I mean, you can have an orgasm, but there is no machine that I'm aware of yet. That will provide you. I mean, they do say, well, you could go to an area of the brain that does that, and I suppose implant something and then have a little button you could push. But like I think they did an experiment with rats and cocaine.
Yes.
Pushing a little button to get cocaine, and they kept pushing the button until they were emaciated and finally passed away into ratdom.
It's like reported it in the Millennium Book of Prophecy. It's true.
That's right. So if we have such a button.
Now, you see, the thing is, it may not be a button. There's a certain prophetic flow of evolution that may see us eventually unlock the secret of how thought works and how thought is the basis for creating physical realities. Now, if that, in 500 years' time, is understood, just like we understand electricity, you could see where people over time, if thoughts are the source of things, then certain sensations and realities could be achieved by bypassing the usual physical, more traditional ways that we achieve them. As in sex, as in food, there's prophecies that are showing that people will stop eating in the future because they'll get their energy directly from light. And, of course, if people do that...
So now sex goes, and now food.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's right. At what point does life not... But what would food be replaced with?
Direct light consumption. You would wear a little cap that for...
I'm consuming some light right now, and it tastes like crap.
Well, you see, there's the whole thing about the thought. It's the thought that may eventually be the way you would sensate. So you wouldn't need to actually eat something to taste it. I mean, it's really way out there, but, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, that things are going to boggle us today... that are going to happen in the future. Just like, you know, people were just saying, Nostradamus, what do you mean the peasants are going to run the world? How can that? That'll be the end of life. That'll be the end of the world. What do you mean the kings aren't going to be around anymore? What do you mean that people aren't going to be in their classes and stay in their places? Mm-hmm. This is too much. And so, you know, as me as a prophet scholar, I've got to, like, consider, well, then there's the things that shock me, I can't, like, write them off. I have to, like, put them on the table and observe them.
Well, you've certainly managed to shock me. All right. Stay right there. We'll be right back. A little box with a switch. Remember this? It don't come easy. Maybe it do. And repetitively, too. Again and again and again and again until you're a mass of protoplasm.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 28, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. I think you've got to love yourself. On the other hand, there's something about thy neighbor. We're about to talk about that.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Now we take you back to the night of September 28, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Here's John Hogue again. John, there are others who have said in the far distant future, they imagine mankind to evolve to a state where we actually no longer possess need
or have physical bodies at all.
Yes. That's the age of Capricorn. That's actually the age that's following the age of Aquarius.
You've got to stay good and close to the phone there.
Yes, here I am.
There you are.
Yes, that's the age of Capricorn. And that could happen in, 4,000 A.D.
4,000 A.D.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there are prophecies concerning that the human being, and again, gets back to the idea of how if a human being is unlocked thought, the nature of thought,
yes,
how it may create reality,
right,
then at some period of time, the whole reality of being in a body will come up as a controversy, as something to encounter.
That's 4,000. That's 4,000. Now, This is just, shortly now, will be 2,000.
Yes.
And imagine, John, if you'd been back at 1,000, trying to imagine what would be in 2,000, you could not have, in a gazillion years, imagined this, because it would all be magic.
Oh, yes. In the opening of my book, I talk about that, how, you know, if people in the year 1,000 could see our cities, could see our clean streets, our clean bodies, healthy, compared to people of medieval times, they would have seen us, and perhaps did see us, as the people who were translated into paradise.
They'd see a car, or they'd see an airplane, and they'd have a heart attack.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the wonderful thing about studying prophecy for me, is trying to get into the heads of people to see their perception of tomorrow and how that changes. I mean, in Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies, I finally had enough room in a book of 1,000 pages to look at how you take famous quatrains of Nostradamus and you look at how the people in the 17th century saw it, the 18th, 19th, 20th, and what you're really seeing is how it's something about people in the past. It's something, often when you're looking at the future is a mirror to reflect where people are at in their past.
Sure.
And why should it stop with our time? I'm sure there are so many things that we can't even imagine that would be amazing. For instance, I think in 50 to 100 years, we were going to find what causes the degradation of cells on the genetic level. And what that means is that people who are 80 years old,
yes,
in 7 years' time, a cell replication will look 21.
Uh-huh. And then be able to remain 21, right?
Yes. And
now,
the old adage, oh, if I only had the body of a 21-year-old, now that I have the wisdom of 80 years. Well,
they usually don't mean that in a particularly spiritual manner, but yes.
Yes. And I often think, though, if we had the raging hormones of being 18 again, I don't know where that wisdom would go.
Well, I do. I do. Oh, there'd be all kinds of court trouble. It is a good thing that we are adjusted to lose this hormonal overdrive. And if we didn't, boy, what a world it would be. It's unimaginable, actually. But they are talking about doing that. Now, the research actually is right on the edge. And in our lifetimes, I'm told by longevity experts, and I've had many on the air, that, Art, if you can last another 30 years, that may be all you need. We'll be there.
Yes, you may live another 300 years after that if you could last 30. It's definitely around the corner, and I would say it's even sooner than 30 years. And of course, imagine, Art, what that would do. I mean, for the world, it would be a reversal of nations in Nostradamus.
For one thing, we'd better give up sex if that happens. and we'll be at just the wrong stage to give it up with our hormones raging away, right?
Yeah.
And the government will be preaching no sex. Talk about a revolution.
Yeah. I mean, there's some wonderful and wacky things that are going to come in the next millennium. It's not going to be boring.
Well, the other thing is, of course, once they discover this, which they're on the edge of, you don't really think everybody will get it, do you?
Well, no, of course not. I mean, and that will cause another set of interesting challenges and perhaps even revolutions. You might have people going to the barricades for age reduction rather than just food and water and the basics that people went to the barricades in the French Revolution. It's a lot of amazing stuff that's coming.
That's really something to think about. Did Nostradamus allude to this?
He alluded to it, but it's also in the Bible. It's also usually translated into the, when the Messiah returns, and we have the thousand-year millennium of peace that's in the Old Testament and New Testament, there are references to people living and dying at age 100 would be like people dying at age 18 today. You know, would be thought to be too soon and too short, that aging would almost disappear. So even the biblical prophets perhaps had a vision of this issue. And perhaps also another thing to consider is the revolution that it'll do to euthanasia. What if people just don't really die except for accidents and untimely deaths of that sort? What if in the natural process of life you lived hundreds or even thousands of years? At a certain time, would the soul want to just leave that body? And if that were the case, people in the future may have a very different view about euthanasia than we do today.
Yeah, sure. If you could live endlessly, then euthanasia would be a personal
choice,
a spiritual choice, right?
Well, yeah, it would be like what the Native Americans do sometimes when someone feels it's their time. They do the death song and they go out
and
alone
die.
And face it in under nature.
They sit and they die.
Yeah.
Inevitably, they die.
Yeah. And there's funny, there's a lot of ancient future twists, too, with the future. Some of the things that are very ancient, like tribal culture, may actually have a renaissance in the future. More communal societies may happen. The nuclear family may not survive. I have a whole chapter about how the nuclear family may undergo a travail that brings back the extended family, where people do help each other more. I mean, a lot of the, and it goes with the cycles of things. As we go in a cycle where we're kind of in a, what some people might call a selfish cycle of me first, my family first, and, you know, we get to the top of the ladder and it doesn't matter. We're kind of all kind of competing against each other. That might actually, with the coming 30 years of dislocation going on in the world, the emergencies that happen at a time may create generations to come that will be more interested in working together.
Well, the communal family is already undergoing unbelievable stress with certain very telling results socially. Mm-hmm. That's happening now.
And also, with the nuclear family suffering like this, you also see something like 3,000 co-housing organizations across America now. There's people pooling their resources together, almost tribally. I mean, tribal is a strong word to use for it, but you could see where, you know, give it a century or give it even a few decades, and give with the situations going on with certain potential breakdowns of our super systems, given that there's these negative prophecies about global civil war, there's also prophecies that counter that, saying, yeah, if there's a global breakdown, then your neighbors suddenly you all get to know each other, you all start work together. I mean, when we had an earthquake here in Seattle once, I got to know a lot of my neighbors when that happened. People often, in dire emergencies, some of the best potentials come out. Altruism, sacrifice, helping each other. We might have to become pioneers again, like our great-grandfathers and mothers in America, because we won't have the systems that if you just push a button and get the things, won't be able to go down to the QFC. We'll have to pool our resources and be together, and that could have very positive results for the future. Unfortunately, coming out of a dire situation, but there's always good that can come out of anything, even the worst situations.
Mm-hmm. Nostradamus saw how much period of trouble before something changed?
27 to 30 years. He talks about a 27-year war of the third Antichrist.
27 years of war?
War, but he uses the word, there's a link to that in that July 1999 prophecy where he implies war by using the word Mars, the God of War,
yes,
or the Martian planet.
Right.
But it would be premature to just use one definition in the occult jargon of that. I mean, Mars has two definitions, basic definitions. Its lower aspect is war, loss of temper, argument, thinking, acting before thinking.
Why is that, by the way? In other words, why? I think the guy wrote the book called Women Are from Venus and Men Are from Mars, right?
Right.
Meaning men are warriors.
Yeah.
Why does Mars mean this? Why does Venus mean that?
It's in the language of astrology. You know, for me, I don't consider astrology a science as much as it is a language. It's an occult language. In, you know, certain, you can put clay before a mediocrity and it'll still look like a lump of clay. You put it before Michelangelo and it looks like a fantastic work
of
art.
That's true.
And the same way with astrology, an adept astrologer who has the gift of speaking the language of the stars and conveying it will get a lot farther than somebody who just doesn't know. It's just numbers and planets. The thing about Mars and about the warrior, yes, Mars is the warrior, but there's two kinds of warriors. There's the warrior that kills, and there's the with the spear, and the warrior that penetrates the truth, the spiritual warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And both are implied in the final line of that famous prophecy. Before and after, Mars rules happily. I see it as another classic situation of a prophet hedging his bets according to two destinies. One that's destructive and one that's creative. And, you know, a lot of people who don't like or are skeptical about prophecy say, oh, well, you know, they're always hedging their bets, the prophets. And I say, yes, exactly. If you're talking about future potentials, how else can you be than to show you here's the positive and the negative potential of the actions you commit today? Absolutely hedges, because we are the ones that are making that future happen. We can go the good way or the bad way. We can win or we can lose. The gamble.
How good is the record of Nostradamus?
Well, there are a whole lot of his prophecies, 800 plus, that are open to interpretation because he wanted them to be open to interpretation.
Fine.
Because for the very reasons where I've been clearer about certain things in the future, which are very shocking.
Yes.
He wanted to coax it, as he said. He said, for a long time, I withheld my pen from paper and kept silent because of the harm that I might do. If people of my present time could see how their current fantasies and expectations and religions and governments would be so vastly changed in the future, they would damn their own future. And so I decided to cloud my work in nebulous, wild poetry. And he did that probably for some other reasons, too. There, you know, some pretty bad people were interested in his prophecies, like Joseph Goebbels.
Oh, I think they would have burned him at the stake or cut his head off or put him on the rack or whatever they did to people like that at that time.
Yeah, that was the initial issue. He had a family to take care of. He was a Christianized Jew. It was an intolerant time. And if it wasn't for his powerful friendship with the Queen of France, he would have been killed. But he did die in his bed, which was quite an accomplishment for a person in his career. But in the future, too, he was also concerned that something he would say, if he said it too clear, might warn somebody like an Adolf Hitler or a Saddam Hussein to do something a little differently and make the future worse.
And or, again, I asked the same question I asked earlier, and that is that how can you be sure that the dire prophecies and predictions on the dire side that you relate to people don't, in fact, through the mass collective consciousness, actually set it into motion? I mean, don't you worry a little bit about that?
I do it all the time. It is the one of the main ethical issues that I deal with in this profession, and it is definitely a possibility. And that's why I hope that the people listening will not just listen to what we're just touching upon here, and will actually read my books and read them completely.
Now, let me promo your book while we're at it. Your book is called
1000 for 2000, Startling Predictions for the New Millennium. And it's published by Harper San Francisco.
Ah.
And it should be out in any of your bookstores, and it's also on the Internet at Amazon and Borders.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it's available everywhere. And I, if you want to talk to me about it, you can also see me at my website, which is hogueprophecy.com.
I think we've got a link up. I hope we do anyway.
Yes, we do. Yes,
it's there. Okay, hogueprophecy.com.
And it is the first book that's coming out, and by November I'll have a book, the first ever made, actually, on messianic traditions. It's called Messiahs.
Messiahs.
We'll look at, all, you know, there's like 30 messiahs expected in the next 50 years.
Really?
But there's never actually been a book that actually looked at them all, because...
In other words, not just the return of Jesus.
Yeah, but... because there's so much myopia in this particular genre of prophecy, because of this old training that everybody has of, well, of course, my Messiah is the only one that's real. All the rest are false prophets.
I've got to sit here and wonder objectively, and probably will cause trouble, but, I mean, what if somebody else's prophet comes back first and they're right?
Well, there's 30 in one chance of that. And I've listed them all, and I've also kind of leveled the playing field by... Sometimes I'll have their quotes, and they won't give you the bylines. So you just read the quote, and you wonder, oh, that sounds like a very beautiful statement, like a Buddha or Christ would say, and then you look at the little box and find out it's Adolf Hitler or something.
Or what if the radical Shiites prophet comes back? You know what they think of us. What are we? The great Satan, right?
So we're the 12th Imam, yes.
We're toast.
Yeah. But, you know, there's all this finger-pointing from all of the prophetic traditions. So in Messiahs, I try to look at how they share hopes and expectations of transformation of the world, and also how they share a lot of religious prejudices. And it's going to be quite a controversial book, and it's going to be in four-color, fully illustrated, with a lot of cutting-edge illustrations.
Just oh, like I'm sure it'll get in a lot of trouble.
Yes, I'm
all right, when we get back, some more of the predictions, 1,000 of them, for 2,000, and then we'll open up the phone lines and we'll let you talk with John Hogue. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 28th, 1999. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
I've always been a fan of sax, and I think Wales. John Hogue, Nostradamus, your calls, more predictions for the coming 1,000 years. John actually has 1,000 of them.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I can't think of a time where also the world was in total chaos. You know, people are weirded out. And I'm beginning to wonder if there's something on this planet that's affecting people's brains.
I believe that we are in uncharted, tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented times. You know, wake up. Something is happening globally to this planet, and it's not normal. It's just not business as usual.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28, 1999.
DigitalChainsaw.com. Now, let's think about that name a little bit. It makes me want to ask, John, with regard to the next 1,000 years, we think we're connected now. We have a very young, as of yet, Internet, although it's already changed the world. What happens in the next 1,000 years with regard to connectivity?
Well, we interface. Internet's just, it won't be in the box on the screen. Maybe not even in another century will pass before we're all like Johnny Mnemonic. Or actually, that's what I was saying earlier about the fascination and repulsion that we have often through the metaphorical Borg of the Star Trek universe. Or maybe the attraction repulsion we have to Darth Vader. The cyber human is an issue that we're going to have to deal with. And they deal with it much sooner than anyone imagines. So it actually brings the challenge of us being more responsible and more aware of our consciousness as we become more interfaced with our reality and our machinery. The issue of who we are, our soul, our being, becomes even more important than it really is now.
But suppose it doesn't work, and socially we don't keep up with it, and we have the ability to make bigger wars, kill faster, kill easier, kill cheaper, to use a Pentagon or warp a Pentagon expression, and we keep acting as we are now.
Well, you know, it's as you were saying earlier, at a certain point, if we keep acting the way we are now, we're going to be like one of those stars out there that may have been communicating to us, but they just didn't get past this barrier that all civilizations have to surmount. I also feel that just because of chance and just because of the luck of things, that there must be some out there who did. And obviously, we may actually be seeing them in our skies.
Possibly. And one can also imagine that we are not supposed to survive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is, evolution, it is a certain conceit that we have that just maybe that conceit has to be destroyed so that we can really survive. And the conceit is that, well, we're humans. We're God's chosen. You know, we're the center of the universe. It wasn't very long ago that people thought the Earth was the center of the universe. Just a few centuries ago.
The universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, that the sun moved around it, and Galileo got
actually,
a lot of trouble.
The funny thing is that if you actually look at a chart of the universe, we're like I am out here in Pahrump, Nevada. In other words, we're out in the middle of nowhere.
Or as basically. Anakin Skywalker would say, how'd you get to the outer rim?
Well, we are the outer rim. That's really the truth.
Yeah.
I was astounded. I don't know if it was Carl Sagan or who it was, but they showed a chart of the whole thing and then pointed to where we are, and we were really nowhere.
Well, you know, National Geographic has this wonderful map in this current issue of the galaxy. It's just this amazing map, and it's also, you know, we're just this little speck way out there in the rim.
That's all we are.
Yeah, and I don't know, for some people that really crushes them to think that way, that we're so small, but in another way, it makes me really hopeful that the universe is so vast and rich that maybe some civilizations out there are figuring it out, and maybe they had their little chemistry set experiment, and they didn't blow themselves up, and they made it. So,
you would think that if they were well-motivated, which we can hope, that if they did figure it out, they would go searching for others to help them make it through, others that otherwise would not make it through.
Yeah. It's like Gardeners of the Galaxy. I mean, there are some theories. I mean, many people who believe in the Pleiadian ideas think that human evolution is 50 million years old, and we're basically a hybrid experiment or a spread of colonists from Vega and from other stars. I think we definitely have to be open to that possibility. And
oh,
I think
there's a lot of people that are not open to that at all.
Yeah, I know. It's it's very hard for the ego, for the conceit, you know, that we have about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we were like Sitchin said, you know, just put here to dig gold, not made too bright. We do only use about 10% of brain capacity, you know.
Yeah, and that brings a whole other issue of what the real final frontier may be for the human race in the next 1,000 years. May not be going into space, although we'll do that. It may be just understanding the capacity of that other 90% of the brain we don't use.
That might be it. All right, let's see what's out there. First time caller line, you're on the air with John Hoke. Hi.
Hey, this is Danny from Kentucky.
Hi, Danny.
How's it going?
All right.
My question is in his research on Nostradamus, did he ever come up with anything dealing with the Illuminati or, you know, the Trilateral Commission? And if you don't mind, what's your views on all that is?
All right. In other words, all the secret societies out there, might as well throw the Masons in, all of these different secret societies, the Illuminati, these societies that are supposedly holding earth-shaking or changing secrets.
There's also the Ashoka Nine. Might as well bring the East in as well.
Sure.
Yes. Nostradamus is very careful, at least in my understanding of his old friends, to not hint a lot about what his associations with his own secret groups were. And one could understand the problem of being a Christianized Jew dabbling in shady, on the fringe, legality, spiritually speaking.
I mean, absolutely.
You could be a doctor and use astrology. Actually, he didn't want to be a doctor. He wanted to be an almanac writer, which probably would have gotten burned at the stake. So because the story goes that he came from a line of doctors, his grandfathers, who were doctors, convinced him that he could kill two birds with one stone, as it were, and be a doctor, which would make it politically correct to use astrology, because they could defend it, because it's in the Old Testament, the use of stars and whatnot. So he was very careful. Certainly you can see some indications that he was a Neoplatonist and a Hermetic, involved in Hermetic mystery schools. And, you know, if he was involved in secret societies, they were of an occult nature and not the kind that were talking about here, that are interfacing with political change as well as spiritual change, like the Trilateral Commission, Query of Sion, the Ashoka Nine, which some people believed influenced and used Hitler as a medium.
I may have told you this before, but it shocked me so. Have you ever been to Italy?
Yes, three times.
The Vatican?
No, I haven't been there. I've only been...
Well, I went to the Vatican. My wife is Catholic. I went to the Vatican. We wanted to see it. Walked right into the front door of the Sistine Chapel. We actually got to see the Pope. It was really cool. Coming out 15 minutes after we arrived and he came out. So we walked into the front door of the Sistine Chapel, and the first thing you see in the Sistine Chapel is this gigantic globe in glass. It's encased in glass. It's you know, half the size of a human being tall. I mean, it's big. And on this globe are the 12 signs of the zodiac.
Yes.
And it just blew me away. I said, what? What's this doing in the Sistine Chapel and right in the front door to boot?
You know that many popes were great astrologers. I noted that in my book, The Last Pope, which we talked about last year. It's some of the popes in the 17th century were some of the finest astrologers of the day. There's people in the 20th century have a misunderstanding about those times. You could do just about anything, even ritual magic. I mean, there were some popes who were great magicians, occultists. But if you did it in a wrong way at a wrong time, you kept it private, and you didn't get caught doing it, you were okay. You were more burned at the stake for just kind of doing it at the wrong time. To the wrong people.
Yeah, that's like today's world, really.
Yeah.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with John Hogan, Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Karen in Houston.
Hi, Karen. You're going to have to yell at us.
All right. Hi, John.
Hello, Karen.
We may be small, but we're here.
That's right.
All right. And I, you know the story, The Wizard of Oz?
Oh, I love it.
All right. Me too. Remember the scarecrow says, rapture, I have a brain?
Oh, yes. He goes, ooh, rapture.
Right.
Like that.
So maybe the rapture everyone's looking for is that kind of an upgrade. I have another thing for you. What do you think? I like your concept of the level, you know, leveling of the playing field. Mm. If we put everything into a better perspective, I think the mass consciousness of everyone will click into the right direction. Mm. When we think of Antichrist and those that Nostradamus predicted and different ones saying these would be the Antichrist, like Napoleon and Hitler. Well, these were men who had a certain spirit. Well, Jesus and different ones, like you're going to write your book on the Messiahs, and I think that's wonderful. I'm looking forward to it. These were men who had a certain spirit. So if you level out the playing field, then you'll understand that even people like Nostradamus, however he viewed the future, there are those who can alter the future.
Oh, yes. If the future were written in stone, the past would be written in stone, and the present would be written in stone, and we would just be stone. life is unpredictable in many ways, and it seems like our society have, for a lot of good reasons, but at least the way I see it is that, you know, every new child is brought into the world as a tabula rasa, an empty page. And for all good intentions, our parents, our priests, our pedagogues try to give us identities or structures, which we need, and perceptions of the spirit, economical understandings, all of that. But in the job, often what is given is borrowed, and often the child is not given a chance to think and explore on their own because it goes against the society, perhaps. And you look at a lot of the great thinkers, even spiritual catalysts of new religions, and you can't really say that any of them were very traditional. I mean, Jesus was not a traditionalist in his time.
Right.
He was a rebel. Buddha upset the Hindu hierarchy completely.
Look, even today, when a new religion comes around, they are called cults.
Yes, the four-letter words.
And sometimes plowed down by tanks.
Yes, yes, indeed. And there may be, one person said to me once that the only difference between a cult and an organized religion is one has political power.
Well, I always said numbers. When you get to have certain amounts of numbers in your religion, then you're mainstream.
Yeah, you become the politics of numbers.
That's it.
Right.
Indeed, and that happened to Christianity. People used to think, back when the world's mainstream religion was Mithraic Persian religion in Rome, they had all kinds of outlandish ideas about what the Christians were doing in the catacombs, eating babies, things like that. The same kind of stuff that you see. I mean, that's one of the other fields that hopefully in the next decade I'll be writing a few books about new religious movements. This has been something I've been studying since 1980,
and this is one of the main reasons why I've been traveling around the world, is encountering directly, experiencing directly, these so-called cults. And because of the possibility that one of these cults or some of these cults may be the new religious mainstream ideas for the next 1,000 years.
Maybe. Absolutely maybe. Undeniable. Well, now prepare yourself. Here he comes. This man claims to be the actual Antichrist.
Oh, he's probably been writing me.
Hello, Art.
Hello there.
Hello, John.
Have you been writing to John?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I wish he would give me an address so that I could send him a copy of 590 of Nostradamus' prophecies that I am in or that my chosen ones are in.
See, he's serious. You really do believe yourself to be the Antichrist, don't you?
Not only do I believe, Art, I am the Antichrist.
I hear you.
Well,
how do you, out of curiosity, how do you know that?
First off, let me give one prophecy of Nostradamus that will click with John, I'm sure.
Sure.
I am Aries. I was born on Thursday, April the 11th, 1940. My mother is born January the 20th, 1918. My father was born July the 18th, 1914. Those are keys for you to understand about my holy day, which is Thursday, and my Aries Ram sign.
Mm. Does any of this mean anything to you, John?
Well, the last bit does have a correlation, but it also is open to another interpretation. They will worship Thursday as their day of worship, and that could also imply America in general because of Thursday being Thanksgiving Day.
I thought Americans worship Friday.
Well, this...
I was being smart.
It's, you know, I have a file of... I must get about once or twice a week people coming to me or saying they're the Messiah or the Antichrist or Mabus or archangels, and I have a whole file of very interesting people that send me letters and emails and stuff on this issue.
And you never know.
I understand your predicament and everyone else's in this earth, because our gene pool has been polluted for 2.2 billion years.
But see here, sir, here's the problem that I have. And I'm not saying you're not the Antichrist. You may well be. But one night, not long ago, I opened the line, the Antichrist line, and I had a full night, a whole show full of people claiming to be the Antichrist.
I understand that.
Not perhaps as serious sounding as you, but some of them are quite serious. So, how are we to know?
Unless and until you come and visit me and I show you reams, literally reams of information, and ancient bricks from Atlantis, because Atlantis is buried here in Atoka, Oklahoma, and other signs that I have here and research that I've done, and explain my birth, my six fingers,
You have six fingers?
I was born with six fingers on each hand.
On each hand.
Are you relating that to the number 666?
The number 666 relates to sex. Six is the number of sex, by the way.
It is?
Yes. And
you know, it's also in Hebraic numeral spelling, it spells out the name Nero. And it may very well be that St. John of Patmos, who wrote the book of Revelation, was honestly thought that the Antichrist would come, as he says in the scripture, in his own time. And it was Nero. Certainly the mark of the beast, if it is 666, would have been on the coinage, as they were saying, Nero's image. Any Roman emperor always stamped his image on the coinage of the day. And since he was ruling Europe at the time, many of the prophecies that people wait for a Messiah in the future or an Antichrist may have already happened 1,000, 2,000 years ago.
All right. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 28th, 1999.
Haven't seen you in a while. How've you been? Have you changed your style? And do you think that we've grown up differently? Don't seem the same. Seems you've lost your feel for me. So let's leave it alone, 'cause we can't see eye to eye. There ain't no good guy. There ain't no...
To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 28th, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. Nothing easy about it, actually.
Another year will make you be happy. Just one more year will make you be happy. But you're crying now.
Memories. John Hogue is here, and we're talking Nostradamus, the predictions of Nostradamus. His book, 1,000 Predictions for 2000. And of course, as you know, that's just around the corner.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name. Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. Now we take you back to the night of September 28th, 1999. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, I have a slight surprise for you, although it's not really a surprise. You may recall last week, or maybe you didn't hear me last week actually say this, in which case you're going to be very surprised, but I play the music of Gordon Lightfoot, you know, and I've been doing it quite a while. Tomorrow night, in the first hour,
you could read my mind, love.
He'll be here. That's Gordon Lightfoot tomorrow night.
Just like an old-time movie, about a ghost from a wishing well.
This man,
in a castle
here tomorrow, first hour. So I wanted to hit you with that before we got too far along tonight. That's tomorrow night, Gordon Lightfoot, right here. Right now, John Hogue. John, if people want to get hold of you and email you or somehow write you a letter or contact you, is there a way they can do that?
Yeah, just go to www.hogueprophecy.com, and right there you'll see my email address. And yeah, please come and send me a letter and email. If you want to get in touch with me through snail mail, you can get in touch with me by writing to Harper San Francisco, if it's in the case of 1,000 for 2,000. And if you want to write to me about any of the books that I've written for Element, which
chapter of Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies, and the upcoming Messiah's book, which will be released in November, you can write Element there in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And but hopefully the best way to catch me and the best way that I'm able to respond to people is through the internet. So also, if somebody, we have the Art Bell Chat Club in Seattle is going to have me come and speak and sign books, and that's going to happen. I will be appearing at the Seattle Art Bell Chat Club Sunday, October 17th at 7 p.m.
Really?
Yeah, and that's going to be at the Seattle Metaphysical Library, and the address is 1000 East Madison. The cross street is 10th, and it'll be in Suite B. And then the other appearance is going to be at a very nice little bookstore just near where I live called Pages, and it's quite an amazing little place. It's very interfacing with the cyber world as well as the literary world. And I'll be there at October 6th, and I'll be appearing for questions and answers and book signings, and that'll be 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and the address there is 432 15th Avenue East, and the cross street is Republican. Now, if you miss that information, you go to my homepage, and you'll see it right there, and you can click on it and get all the direct information. Same with the Art Bell Chat Club.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me you could afford to give away some more of the secrets for the next 1,000 years without giving too many away or ruining your book, couldn't
you? Oh, yes. There's 1,000 predictions is a lot of information. I could probably go on for 20 hours.
Well, don't, but do give us a few others.
Okay. Well, let's look at since we've been talking about North Carolina, let's look at some of the predictions concerning global warming and the coming hurricanes. There was a famous prophet from Scandinavia called Anton Johansson, who in 1918 visualized hurricanes reaching as far as Oslo, Norway, because of global warming. He didn't call it global warming, but he saw it anyway, and he was talking about an unheard-of hurricane raging over two continents. I was led in spirit to the great cities on England's east coast.
You mean like a superstorm, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like one of these storms that they're expecting in the next 40 years that could be 50% stronger than Hurricane Mitch and Hurricane
mm-hmm.
Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Where he saw ships thrown on shore and many collapsed buildings and much wreckage and floating on the water. Later he said, then I was shown Holland, Belgium, the German coast of the North Sea. Even Denmark's western and northern coasts and Sweden's western coast had suffered. And, you know, we might see hurricane warnings that far north. In 1990, a bit of a hurricane did slam into southwestern England. And that was and knocked down thousands of trees in Europe. So, unfortunately, situations like Hurricane Floyd are just beginning. I would not be surprised if every year the southeastern United States has to see 2 or 3 million people evacuate. And hopefully the people will take heed of those warnings and not get lackadaisical about it, because the storms that are coming are getting more serious. And if there's some good that can come out of this, hopefully the constant battering from these storms may tell the people of the world that we really have to get serious about eradicating global warming, stopping the destruction of the forests that eat up the carbon that make the hot atmosphere. And we could fix it. You know, we only have to plant 6 billion trees. It sounds like a lot, but it only covers an area of the size of Australia. And, you know, if it was just a simple process of everybody being responsible for every one tree they cut, they plant three. That could, within a 10 years time, do a lot to devour the carbon in the air and stop the global warming.
All right, back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Hogue. Hello.
Oh, this is Y2 Carl in Seattle, and I'm just realizing that my voice is traveling 44,000 miles to talk to a guy that's about 8 blocks away.
That's exactly correct, yes.
So, I mean, really, I live on Capitol Hill, too. Well, I got three things here, and I'll just spit them out and let you guys respond to them, and I'll try to be brief. And number one is I have a hard time with prophecies, and actually John touched on it earlier. People are always going on about the Book of Revelations. I always thought that if you read it in the context of its time, the Book of Revelations is a veiled thing about Nero and his persecutions of the Christians. And I have a problem with people using the Bible as a thing of prediction because it's a book in translation. And unless these people who are coming up with this stuff know their Aramaic, Greek, and Hebrew really well, and I have the same problem with Nostradamus in that he says a French speaker in the 16th century.
Yes.
The second thing I have is, and it has to deal with you, Art, and it has to deal with thought experiments, you know, and I was thinking about that because you're always talking about you don't want to do thought experiments, but yet in a way with your program you do. And oftentimes I refer to your program as being sort of doomsday du jour.
Oh, absolutely.
Or doomsday du noir, actually. And I understand your fascination, but I was just thinking about that. Because, like, for instance, today in the New York Times, they said that actually this year we're way below average on earthquakes. They had a chart and the science.
Boy, you sure couldn't. Well, maybe.
Well, they have a chart in the science.
Maybe.
And the highest one was in 1943 of recent times, but there was a high one in 70. Actually, in 70, the most destructive year was because there was about 200,000 people died. And then my third one just has to do with bumper music. How come you don't ever play any Al Green or Dinah Washington? It's just like, I mean, I grew up in Kansas listening to soul music.
Sometimes what a completely trivial complaint. I like your other one better. And now, look, this year there may not have been as many earthquakes of certain sorts. I don't know. But we have had an awful lot of destructive earthquakes this year. There's no getting around it.
And they started right after the dating in Nostradamus. You have,
you know,
yeah,
right, a few weeks after you have Turkey, you have Greece, you have Taiwan.
Yeah, but that's just a cluster, you know. That's just a statistical thing. I mean, it's like you know, Art's wife getting, you know, this thing four times in a row. Well, I'll tell you the odds. You know, if you want to win at gambling, open a casino.
Well, you know what we ought to do.
House wins.
Well, you know what we ought to do, Carl, is because you know we'll have to see. We are if this window that starts, especially supposed to start even to get more intense next month in October, if this is the right interpretation of Nostradamus' narrative, which I read a few hours back. If it is, then all these allusions to the spring are about the coming spring, and we'll see if this interpretation is correct.
Well, I wonder about that.
I hope it isn't, frankly.
But yeah, I wonder
I think
about
it will
that
be.
Because one of the things I'm interested in is sort of like the study of miracles, especially in the 20th century. And I guess I'd just call myself an agnostic. Actually, I call myself a cynic in the classical sense, if you think of Diogenes.
Right.
But I think that belief is really, I mean, if you look at particle physics, if like the attention of sentient beings on a physical event will alter that physical event, then I worry about doomsday thing in that we may be calling, I mean, we're maybe marching on Frankenstein's castle to kill a monster we're creating.
Well, I love that you bring this up because this is why I hope that people will just read the books completely, because it is an important issue, and what I call propaganda, and that is that we are collectively, perhaps, duped over thousands of years to follow certain misinterpretations. As you were saying earlier, it might have been about a wrong interpretation of Revelation, maybe taking an event that should have happened 2,000 years ago, projects it into our near future. And over 2,000 years of indoctrination, subconsciously speaking, people may be actually triggering it into happening.
I don't deny it. I wonder about it myself, caller. So you know I do. I've talked about it a lot.
By the way, that thing about sex in a button,
yeah.
I always thought it would be like masturbation, because I thought sex is something that happens between two people when it's really good. I can't see that ever going away. And that thing about the thing about the monkeys and the cocaine, the only way to get those monkeys
sir,
to take it.
But, sir, wait a minute. If you'd been alive in the year 1000, could you have imagined television?
Yeah.
No, not a chance.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any Nostradamus predictions about the Internet.
Well, good question.
Good question.
All right.
I haven't seen anything directly yet, but I'm still looking.
Because we're all wondering where the Internet is going. You cannot see an NFL football game or a commercial on TV or even a regular series show that doesn't have its own web page. I mean, and look how fast this has happened.
It's amazing. It is out of control.
It's connectivity. And eventually, everything's going to be fiber optics. You're going to get your TV, your movies, your telephone, your communications. Everything with the outside world will occur through a fiber optic cable.
Yeah, I just got 200 new stations a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
absolutely. I can't believe it. I mean, there's so much to look at now that, you know, the overwhelm is a major issue in the 21st century. I mean, we talk about the battles in the 20th century between union and management that were sometimes triggered revolutions in the early part of this century that's ending.
Right.
Overwhelm on many levels is going to be one of the definitive challenges for individuals and collective groups alike. How do we siphon through all of this information? How do we... I often think that what it may do is bring about a whole new interest in some of the more ancient sciences of self-observation. Because when you can virtually make reality, when you have to deal with so much information, you either get overwhelmed or you have to become a center of this, a quiet kind of conscious center in the
right.
cyclone of all that stuff. And, you know, it may be the best way to deal individually with the roller coaster times that are coming, to be a center of the cyclone, to deal with it as best you can, but always retain your oasis of peace and awareness and love.
I, without further comment, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Hogue and Art Bell. Hi.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
Excellent. I have a question for your guest. Sir, where is the evidence, or where can I find evidence that states that the credibility of Nostradamus exists? I've heard a lot in the papers and a lot of tabloid magazines about Nostradamus and just, you know, bits and pieces here and there, but, I mean, his credibility as far as being similar to Moses or maybe Abraham, so that we may take these prophecies as being serious. I mean, where is the evidence that states that he is of such stature?
Okay, first what you need to do is not look into the National Perspirer or some
right.
of the newspapers, because most of the time there they don't even give you the index number to the prophecy, because usually it's made up.
Mm-hmm.
The next place to look is at a complete examination of the prophecies. Now, in the last 35, 40 years, there's only been two made, one a very fine one that's quite a skeptical approach by Edgar Leone. And that is, anybody interested in Nostradamus should look at that. The other one is the one that I wrote, which released in 1997. And what I like to consider is that one looks at Leone's work as well as others and tries to find kind of a middle road between skepticism and blind believers. But the other way to do it is you have to go back and find the earliest edition of Nostradamus' original French, which I did happen to find in the Aix-en-Provence library. And they were kind enough to give me a copy of it.
Mm.
And then you have to, at least what I've done, is study the possible nuances of ancient and medieval and Renaissance French. Latin, and some of the local dialects like Provençal and Languedoc, to get a feel for how Nostradamus filtered what he saw. And so, I mean, it's quite a study, and it's not something that can be done on a shoestring or just a real quick zip through it. I am going to try to write a little pocketbook. It'll be released, scheduled in the spring, which will kind of give you a kind of a cliff notes on Nostradamus.
Okay, one more question, actually, for both of you. I've heard some people tell me that the Antichrist is on Earth today.
Yes.
And some people say that it's the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And they say this because of some sort of Roman numerals or something like this in his clothing or in headgear or something like this. Does anyone of you know anything about this?
Well, some people think that the Vidi Vedi Vici is sometimes used in his mitre cap, and that ancient Latin translated to numbers of 666. But yeah, that is a tradition that's been around, especially since the Great Reformation, the split and the schism in the church between Protestants, protesters, and the Catholic mainstream at the time of the 17th century. And so there is a tradition, and in the book 1000 for 2000, I also address that tradition that looks at some future pope as the Antichrist. In a way, a lot of new religions can be viewed also as Antichrist, maybe in a wrong way. It may be they're just new, and the new is terrifying.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Art Bell and John Hogue. Hello.
Yes, hello. I'm quite amazed that I got through. It's not quite related in a way. I'm kind of going through a spiritual awakening and in contact with a lot of different things. It's a little bewildering. I wonder which way is up. I should listen to your show. I mean, I've only listened to your show a few times. And
are you in Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, I'm in a place that's considered by some of the people around here protected.
Must be up in Alberta somewhere.
No, it's BC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, British Columbia. I've heard people say that. But, you know, if we're doing what I think we're doing to our environment, I don't think there's anywhere to hide. Now, that's just me, negative old cynical me, but I look at the... I've been following the environment like a hawk, and I really think the changes are going to be global, and there's not really going to be a safe place to hide if what I think is going to happen is going to happen.
Your consciousness is your only safe place. One mystic Osho used to call it the Noah's Ark of consciousness.
Yeah,
the only ark we're going to have.
Yeah.
Our own intelligence is going to be our art to get us through the navigate through this time.
John, once again, it has been a great pleasure having you on, and we shall together watch events unfold.
Oh, yes. I always enjoy being on your show. It's wonderful.
Good night, my friend.
Good night.
That's John Hogue, one of the world's greatest experts on Nostradamus. Tomorrow night in the first hour, Gordon Lightfoot. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Good night.